Hi there, Nessa from StudyClicks here. The following podcast is the audio from a live webinar featuring StudyClicks CEO and co-founder Luke Saunders in conversation with child psychologist Dr. Richard Hogan. The webinar was recorded on the 10th of November 2025 and aimed to answer all the questions that parents have around helping their children through exams and how to keep them motivated throughout the school year. For more tips and resources on how to support your child in secondary school, check out the Parents Centre on StudyClicks. The link is in the description of this podcast. I'll pass it over to the lads now. I hope you enjoy listening.
And we are delighted to collaborate with Dr. Richard Hogan as an extension of our effort to support parents. And if you're not already familiar with Dr. Richard's work, he's an author and a family psychologist, and we're especially excited to have him on board as our StudyClicks parent advisor figure. After a very successful back to school webinar in September, we're delighted to have Richard back with us this evening to chat with our CEO, Luke, who's also with us, about just your general role as a parent in your child's study and motivation around their study, which I suppose is especially relevant considering we're heading into the first batch of in-house assessments this side of Christmas. So hopefully you'll get some useful insights from the lads tonight. And with that said, I'll hand you over to the two lads now. But just to say, I will be keeping an eye in the chat throughout the hour, and feel free to send any questions you'd like me to put to either Luke or Richard or both of them. And we'll cater for those the best we can. So with all of that said, thanks very much again for joining. And I'll give you to the two lads now.
Thanks a million, Amanda. Thanks a million. So my name is Luke. I'm a former teacher, science and maths teacher, and also CEO of StudyClicks. And just a quick background on how this webinar came about was that I heard Dr. Richard Hogan speak to a group of guidance counsellors and parents here in Sligo, which is where I'm based. And straight away, I realised that it would be really helpful to share that knowledge and those practical advice with parents to the wider StudyClicks community. So hence we're here tonight. The areas that we're going to cover tonight, it'll be kind of pretty broad ranging, but we're going to be looking at motivation first of all. It's a key time in the year, as Amanda mentioned, with most students will be doing Christmas tests coming up, or mocks will be on the horizon as well. So we're going to be talking a lot about motivation. We're going to talk about how to study. We're going to talk quite a bit about dyslexia as well. And I also, if you can, feel free to put in any questions that you would like us to put to Dr. Richard in the chat, and we'll come to those. So, yeah, so let's kick it off, Richard. So first of all, like I said, we're at a key time in the year for many students, be them a first year, be them third year, second year. Most students will be doing in-house assessments. Mm. And for a lot of students out there, motivation can be a real struggle, right? And that can lead to conflict with the parent. In terms of motivating yourself as a kind of 14-year-old or 15-year-old, should the motivation be coming from within, or should it be something that the parent is offering kind of rewards? Yeah, how do you build that into a child's motivation?
Yeah, it's a great question, Luke. And that's probably the dilemma for many parents right now. And it's what I meet in my clinic and when I talk to students. Often at that young age, the motivation won't be coming from within, right? Often at that young age, you don't see past, this evening, not to mind tomorrow, or like November, or even like June and all that. So you don't see too far down the road. And so sometimes I think the motivation will come through a parent explaining the kind of why of study, because just in my experience, and I work with this so much, when you're trying to force your child to study, it's what Michel Foucault, the French philosopher, says, where there's power, that's the forcing. There'll be resistance often. A child will resist it when it's just like, get up and study. But what I do with my own, I have a 14-year-old daughter myself here, studying for her junior cert. And what I've done with her over the last number of years is trying to get her to understand the why of study, why you're doing it for, not for me. And it's often to think about that when you say, I'm so proud of you. I'd often think about that and say, I'm so impressed with what you're doing for yourself. I'd always be more than I'm proud of you. I'm so impressed what you're doing for yourself. So I'm just trying to change the language around why you're studying. The why of it is really important to get to the motivation. Because if I understand that I'm studying for myself, and this is what I'm doing when I'm talking, particularly teenage boys, they might struggle with this one, Luke, a bit more, maybe, Mm-hmm. And it's about maybe understanding their feelings around why they study rather than just being told to go up and study. And I tell them this, if you put a few small things in place today, tomorrow you'll feel better about yourself. And I asked them this question, you know, if I said, do this today, now when I meet them, I'd say, and then I meet them the next day, I say, how do you feel today about yourself? They'd say, well, I do feel actually much better myself. I say, why? Why do you feel better about yourself? Because I'm doing something positive for myself. And I'm like, yeah, for you. And it's that's, you know, what we're trying to do is get independent, you know, self-motivated learners here, right? Mm-hmm. And not every child is that. But what you're trying to do is plant that thought into their head about themselves. This is for me. This isn't for mom or dad or the grandparents or anybody. This is for me to better myself. And when I do put a few things in place today, you know, tomorrow I can feel good. And often what I'd say to them, like, if you really want to, because they're kind of into this stuff, you know, because they watch TikTok and they're into motivation and they're into goal setting. I don't know if you've noticed that with you know, kids today, they're more into motivation and goal setting and all that. And what I'd often say to them is like, if you want to achieve anything, sometimes there's a bit of delaying gratification. You know, there's a delaying gratification in the moment. And so that might be like, you know, what I mean by that is that if you study in that moment, it mightn't be fantastically exciting. That's the delaying of gratification, going out with the lads or whatever it is. But you can feel incredibly better about yourself the next day or next day. So you're just trying to help them with the why a bit of it, more than just kind of going, get up and study. Because you'd often be just, why? I mean, they won't even ask the question, why am I doing this? They just will resist it, and you can't drag them up there. And even if you go up and sit with them, they could be looking at their book, but they won't be studying. And so what you're trying to do always is get them to think about, why am I doing this for me, not for anybody else, why for me? And I'd say, look, a really important thing is, you know, I'd say to them around, say, you know, October, say if it's a junior cert student, this time next year you'll be getting your results, you know, how do you want that guy to feel, or how do you want her to feel at that particular time? Right. And now you have the power to impact on how that person feels. Like, you have the power to impact on how you feel tomorrow by doing a few little steps today, but you have a real power about how you'll feel next year by putting a nice process in place. And so that's just getting them to think about themselves as, you know, working for themselves more than anybody else.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, I had a conversation today actually with a parent, and she has a child who's, I think he's in third year, maybe fifth year, but she was saying that, like, she was really struggling to get him to motivate or be self-motivated, like you describe, and had tried lots of things, reward, et cetera, et cetera. And then she said, just last year, everything changed. And I said, you know, what did you do? She's like, it's not what I did. It's the friendship group that he got into.
Absolutely.
And all the friends that he's hanging around with now are super motivated types of people. And he just, such high peer pressure to keep up with them. And it's worked out really well. And so that, you know, it's hugely impactful is the press. But I suppose the converse of that is, what happens if your child falls in with a group that actually have a really negative attitude towards study, and maybe that holds them back?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely it. And with boys, again, particularly, I think teenage boys will pretend that they don't study, you know. They'll say that, whereas I think teenage girls might be a bit more honest or might even inflate what they're doing, whereas teenage boys will say, you know, no, I didn't do a thing. And all of a sudden, one of them is getting four distinctions. And anybody will know that to get that, they have had to have been studying, right? And I suppose it's having that conversation with your child about that, a whole idea that, you know, how do you want to feel next year when these results come out, even if the lads say they're not studying. It but helping your child to see beyond what the lads are saying, perhaps they are studying. And I'd say to them, look at their results when they're getting them, you know, and then you'll see what the truths, the real story is here. And if you want to be the one falling behind, you have to make that decision for yourself. If you want to be the one who's happy in themselves and working hard and achieving something, because I know, Luke, honestly, there's nothing better. I don't think there's any better feeling. And, you know, I'm nearly 50 now. I don't think there's any better feeling in our lives than when you put a bit of a process in place and you work towards that, you know, and you work a process and you get the outcome. There's no better feeling than doing well in an exam, studying for it, doing well in an exam, you know, preparing for an interview, doing well in the interview, getting the job. That's all about preparing and preempting things and bringing in what you want into life, you know, a good outcome. There's no child doesn't want a good outcome in their junior cert or leaving cert. No child doesn't want, they just have maybe bad thinking and they have bad paradigms that they run. And a lot of the times, what I'd say from when you're really digging into this stuff, look, what I'd often see with younger students and even older students is that they'd have a paradigm that they think they're not clever. So the guy who gets caught in with the friends, you know, if my son was caught in, it's a very good point. If my son, just say I have three daughters, but if my son was, or my daughter was in with a group of guys that, you know, didn't perform or weren't doing well and all that kind of stuff, I'd be kind of saying, you know, but that idea of water, finding its level, what is it in that group that they're seeking out? It's probably the idea that, you know, I won't feel inferior in this group, you know, and I won't feel stupid in this group because all of these guys are, you know, not really putting an effort in. And I'd say there's a paradigm underneath that, that it, this is the paradigm that I would imagine is like, you know, if I don't study and when I don't do well, at least I can say I didn't study. And so it's a way of kind of emotionally dealing with the fact that you think yourself to be stupid. And what you're trying, that is misery for like your life going down the road. That paradigm is the most destructive paradigm that a child can live with, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. They'll bring that into life by not studying that well, you know, doing bits and pieces here and then getting a bits and pieces results and then feeling crap about themselves and then more and more and more self-negative self-talk and self-limiting beliefs. And what you're trying to do as a parent, if I see them hanging around with a group of friends, just trying to, I would never say, you know, I wouldn't say don't hang out with those lads. I'm kind of saying, what do you like about hanging out with those lads? Are those the kind of lads that are pushing you on? What do those lads want from life? You know, what do you want from life? You know, and are they studying? Do you think they're studying? Are they just saying that? Is that a bit of bravado? And what do you want to do? Do you want to kind of like, because that's, that bravado seems a bit false. I'd have those kind of conversations with your child just to help them to critically evaluate what they're doing and what's going on in their life. Because, you know, they might even just grunt at you, Luke. But I guarantee you they'll think about it when you're not around, and they'll think about it when they're with that group of friends and think, yeah, are these the kind of guys that support me? Are these the kind of guys that are driving me on? Actually, are these guys really studying? They probably are sneaky studying here. So you're just trying, you know what I mean? You're just trying to open up their cognition a bit.
Yeah. And you mentioned there like self-esteem, right? And that seems to be at the root of a lot of things around motivation. Like, if, like, I'm sure there's parents out there are listening in who are like, their child won't study, right? And there's probably a natural amount of that, but then there's sometimes when that's at a point where it's actually, maybe there's mental health issues going on. Yeah. Like, what signs are you looking for to go like, this is normal behavior from a 14-year-old girl or boy or 16-year-old or whatever, or actually, no, I might have something to worry about here.
Yeah, well, I, for example, like, you know, not wanting to study. I don't think I ever wanted to sit down in school and study, if I'm being honest, right? Mm. I did it, but I don't think I ever wanted to do it. I figured out my own motivation by fifth year, you know what I mean? And if I'm being honest, I needed to do a really bad junior cert. So sometimes, you know, from my experience working clinically, sometimes we do need to have a bad event. You know what I mean? We do need that bit of ground zero to kind of go, holy crap, I need to get my act together here. And I think boys probably need that moment. But what I look at there, you know, the inability to concentrate, the inability to actually sit down, the inability to focus. Now, there could be loads of reasons for that. And it could just as easily just be their device and the constant consuming of a device. So their brain is kind of wired, you know, for a quick, immediate information. Everything's abbreviated and instantaneous, right? Mm. And so the world of study is slow, and the world of study is on a book, you know, and it's uneventful and it's not very exciting and it's not very abbreviated and it's not very instantaneous. It's actually sitting down and kind of like applying yourself slowly. So it could just be that little bit of technology disrupting it, or there could be something underlining where you hear your child or you see your child really struggling to actually just sit in a space. So you could have ADHD or whatever it is going on there. And you will know your child at that point. You will know from, you know, being with them all their lives. Nobody will know them like you do. You'll know if you think there might be something underlining there that's disrupting, like dyslexia, dyscalculia, you know, dyspraxia, you know, ADHD. Those are things that would really get in the way, that bit of divergence there would really get in the way of just sitting down and, like, you know, being able to study like another child.
Leaving Cert Maths doesn't have to be a struggle. With over 500 step-by-step video lessons, exam-style questions, and expert marking advice, StudyClick's Boost makes higher and ordinary level maths manageable. Get guided support on algebra, calculus, probability, and more, all at a fraction of the cost of grinds. And right now, you can get €10 off with the code PODCAST10. Go to studyclicks.ie and start making maths easier today.
And that actually, what you mentioned, dyslexia, that popped up in the last webinar. And doing some research, there's actually a blog on StudyClicks. If there's any parents out there with children with dyslexia or have dyslexia themselves, we have a blog there about how to study for students with dyslexia. If you just search dyslexia, you'll see it. But I was interested to hear in that last webinar that you have dyslexia yourself, Richard. Yeah. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that, like, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and 80s Ireland was not a good place to have dyslexia, Luke. And I'm an ambassador for Dyslexia Ireland, you know what I mean? And so my daughter here is dyslexic. So it's just going down to the genetic code and all the rest of it. you know, it's just a learning difference. And yeah, have we gotten better at it in schools and understanding of it? Well, we don't know what it is. I'm actually really good at English, you know. I write for the Irish paper, you know. I've been nominated for Irish Book Awards. I'm a good writer, and yet I have dyslexia, so that doesn't add up at all. You know what I mean? So we don't really know what it is. And W.B. Yeats had dyslexia, our greatest Irish poet, and, you know, Einstein was dyslexic, John Lennon was dyslexic. So we don't know really what it is. We just know that it's a processing around numbers and words and letters and all that kind of stuff is a bit... gets a bit, you know, confused in the brain, whatever way that happens, right? We don't really understand that. But as I said, I'm an ambassador for Dyslexia Ireland, and I hear and I talk with dyslexic children all the time. And I only, you know, last year I heard a child say to me in my clinic, the teacher said to them, "That's not dyslexia, John, that's pure stupidity." And I'm thinking, Christ, that's 2024 now. That's disappointing to hear that, right? And so for me, when I think about my own childhood growing up, Luke, dyslexia really eroded my confidence in myself. It really, I always think of it as a dyslexic voice. That's the way I think about it. It's a voice in your head that says, don't do that. You can't spell that. Don't do that. You're not clever. They'll find out that you're not that smart. You know, don't read that. If the teacher asks you to read, make up an excuse so you don't have to read. So you're constantly kind of playing defense on the fact that you don't want to get found out. And I remember I taught English for years, Luke, you know what I mean? And I love English and I love poetry, and poetry makes more sense to me than anything because it's so abstract and language is bent, you know, they bend language in poetry and all that. But I wrote about my experience in 2021, and the amount of people who wrote to me, the amount of, you know, letters I received through my clinic, the phone calls, this on social media, people just like contacting me saying, my son has this, this is my son, you described my son. And people contacting me saying, in the adult life, saying that you described my childhood. And I was just saying what a brutal thing it is to live with and how awful it is. And we need to open up our understanding of it so that our children don't think of themselves as deficits and less than. You know, and when we take a child out of the class, we're immediately segregating them and changing them and making them feel different and not as clever as and all that stuff. So we have to really kind of rethink about, you know, how we think about dyslexia. And if I'm a parent on this, you know, I'm a parent of a dyslexic child myself, and I spotted it years ago when she was young. I could see her learning off the stories, you know, and reading them. It sounded like she was a brilliant reader, but she just learned it off, you know. And I was like, I know what you're doing, because I did that 35 years ago myself, right? And it's just, it can really erode your confidence. What I did is made a joke out of it the whole time in the family. Just take the stigma out of it, you know. And what I'd say to parents listening to this, which is really important, look, we all need to kind of like, you know, take a bit of a breath around our kids. You know what I mean? They will find their way in the world. Yes, we're there to push them. Yes, we're there to help them to get, you know, a little bit clearer in their thinking, because their brain isn't so developed and, you know, it isn't so sophisticated at 14 or 15. And so we're trying to help them. But we all need to take a little bit of a break here, and don't forget to have a bit of levity with our kids and fun with our children too, because the education system can be kind of like, you know, a bit heavy for them if they do have something like this particularly. But even if they don't, it can be all very serious, and we need to have a bit of fun with them, because they're only going to be children and teenagers once here, and they will find their way in the world. You know, I found my way, you found your way. Everybody I know that I've worked with, even when the most severe cases of school refusal and emotional-based school avoidance, they've all found their way, and they've all found the thing that they went off into. And that's an important thing for us all to kind of think about as parents, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really important message. And like, I often think, I was, you know, I have friends or a couple of, you know, children with dyslexia, and I was thinking that, like, if you were to design a system that would make it difficult for a child with dyslexia, it would be something like the Leaving Cert. You know, let's do 15 written papers in the course of 2 weeks, and it's all big blocks of text. You've got to write essays. Like, it's, I can only imagine how scary it can be. And like, one of the things we get a lot of feedback from students who use StudyClix, and like, one of the things that they really gravitate towards is video learning, particularly.
Video learning content.
And even audio content. So, you know, you could be listening to a podcast about W.B. Yeats. Not always just text-based learning can be really helpful. And I suppose that's one of the things that technology has really helped is
100%,
you know.
And also, you know, how you test your child. That's another really important thing, you know, that like learning comes in so many different ways. And that, like, you know, having a little quiz at the dinner table about Yeats or his poetry or like maths or history or like, you know, that's what I do with my daughter. She loves that kind of stuff. That kind of like, give me a question there about the age of exploration. And you're just asking, right, you know, and so it doesn't even feel like it's learning. It feels like it's a bit of fun. And that's what I'd always say. We can learn in so many, it doesn't have to just be black and white textbook. And your child might be incredibly visual in how they learn, you know, and all the rest. I used to walk around and read it out loud so I could hear myself say it, and then I'd learn it off and I'd get into my head and like that. So I like to learn that way, which is probably more of a traditional way of learning. But I'd say more modern students love the kind of vlog, you know, the YouTube clip or whatever it is, because they're just much more used to visual clips. And then a bit of fun around the kitchen table about asking questions like science or whatever it is, or Macbeth or whatever the play is, just to hear and get them talking so that they can hear themselves going, Jesus, yeah, I do know an awful lot about Macbeth. I know, you know what I mean? I know way more. Because once they kind of, when they know that, they relax.
Yeah. Totally. We might take a couple of questions. Before I do that, Amanda, what I might do is just while we're talking about that is actually just show people very quickly. It's not going to be a big mad sales pitch, but just show you what StudyClicks is, because I think that it's quite relevant to what we were just talking about. So if I'm a student here studying, let's say, Leaving Cert English, Stephen would jump in here and he would pick the topic he's talking or he wants to learn. Right. So, for example, if I'm doing Yeats this year for the Leaving Cert, I click on Yeats. I've got a series of exam questions, each with the marking scheme. But there's a whole series of videos and notes around that. So, for example, there's a podcast about W.B. Yeats, which would suit perfectly a student.
Absolutely. With dyslexia. Fantastic.
You know, or else they could click in here and go, OK, there's a student sample answer to a Yeats question. But with StudyClicks, they're getting feedback from an examiner about what's good about it, which is all the green stuff, and then what's bad about it, which is all the red stuff, like the questions lost focus, and then grades it. So students love that level of kind of feedback, so they can kind of self-assess themselves. If I was studying maths, for example, I could go in here, this is Junior Cert Maths, and let's say the student's studying financial maths. Again, they've got exam questions, they've got the answers, they can watch a video of someone working through it. Or if they identify that they can't actually do a particular thing, like let's say they can't work out income tax questions, they can watch a video on that. So it's very much, StudyClicks is all about supporting the learning that the student's is doing in class. And sometimes people say to me, you know, oh, StudyClicks just grinds. And it's like, no, it's not. It's building upon what your child is doing in school, but in a way that suits them. And what you'll find is the child finds a way that suits their particular way of learning. So maybe, Amanda, do you want to jump in with one or two questions, and then we'll move on to the next bit?
Sure, yeah. And thank you so much to everyone who has asked questions. We have loads of interesting stuff coming in. So as we've talked a little bit about dyslexia and stuff, but I have a good few questions around ADHD and students who are kind of struggling to motivate themselves because they don't enjoy environments where they have to stay seated for a long time or focus for a long time, and they just struggle with the focus that is required. So I suppose any tips or tricks for that cohort of parents who have those children at home?
Yeah, look, that's the reality. The Leaving Cert actually only suits a minority. It doesn't suit the majority of people. It suits a very, very small minority. That minority are conscientious. There's five personality traits, hyper-conscientiousness, and it suits that kind of a child. But for a child with ADHD, and depending what their interests are in, you know what I mean? ADHD, this is what people don't really understand about ADHD. It's also a very negative self-talk, Amanda. Like, it's really negative self-talk, and is also incredibly exhausting. So it's not like you're just a child who's a bit, you know, hyper in the class and all that. It's absolutely exhausting to be in that child's head, and they have to hold themselves for the 6 or 7 hours. So when they come home, they might be absolutely wiped out and exhausted because they've gone through like 4 days where another child has gone through, like, you know, just a day in school. For them to hold themselves and all of that stuff, it requires an incredible amount of energy. And then they mightn't sleep that well at night, right? And so this is, there is a huge deficits in here for a child with ADHD. And I would say what you're trying to do there is trying to figure out what their interests are. For me, I'd be trying to stack a good habit in there with my child who was ADHD, like a good habit, like trying to get them to do things like exercise a little bit, you know, just to get them to connect with something that would get dopamine going and get these nice like neurotransmitters going, so that kind of like regulates them a little bit, that everything isn't about study and that. But I'd also be trying to figure out what subjects do they like, because they might have one or two subjects that they like, right? And so when they're going to study in the evening, I would be trying to get them to think about, what I used to do is when I studied, I'd have my favorite subject first, English, right? That would be the first subject. I'd never start off with Irish or maths, because if I looked down and saw my study time table and saw maths, I'd be like, affect that. I'm not going to bother studying, like, to be honest, if I'm being honest, you know. But if I see English or history or French, I'd be thinking, oh yeah, I like those. And so again, it's just about trying to get the child to kind of be a little bit more intentional about what they'd like to study, what they're interested in, and building a little habit. Particularly with a child with ADHD, it's hard because, you know, they have something in there disrupting them. But the habit and the routine of the habit will actually help them to get a little bit more, you know, track, a little more tracks on their life, you know. And that's an important thing. It'd be very hard to build it straight away. That requires a little bit of slow building, and that, you know, allowing for them not to study some days and allowing for them to have disruption there. But you're trying to slowly stack a nice behavior into their lives. And then after they study it, ask them that question, how do you feel now about studying? And they might say, I feel better about myself. And they're going to go, well, then good. Is study a good option or bad? You know, is study the right option? It's the right option for me. And just, you're just trying to build in with their thinking, but also build in with their kind of like thinking about what they're going to study, so that they have a nice little routine there. Because a child with ADHD, honestly, Amanda, this was like, parents don't really get this. It's like looking at Everest, you know, and going, holy shit, how do I climb this whole thing? You know, how do I do that? And what you're trying to do with a child with ADHD is this, no, it's not that. It's not the peak. It's not the summit here. We're looking at this little step over here. That's what we're doing first. And just help them with that.
Yeah, very good. I think you touched on a couple of things there that, of course, relate to the cohort of ADHD, but just more generally, like the importance of kind of getting organized and kind of structuring your study around things that you're actually interested in, to use that as a motivation tactic. And exactly. We do have a few people kind of coming in to chat, like, okay, I have the study planner template that's available for free through StudyClicks, but I don't know what to fill it with. And I don't know where to start. And I kind of a couple of different year levels. I have as young as first year, but still I have a 6 year parents with the same type of question of, I know we need a study plan. Where do I start with my study plan? And maybe Luke, you can kind of weigh in on your experience.
Yeah, I might just give you a couple of bits and then maybe Richard take over on that.
Yeah,
that,
go on there.
When I talk to students sometimes in schools, and it's a very common question, and they're like, how can I study when my teachers are giving me so much homework?
Yeah.
Like that's something I always hear, right? And it's like, your teachers are giving your child, or your child's teachers are giving them homework because they think that's going to help them study. So what I would always advise is, before a student starts studying, number one, get the room distraction free. Like, a lot of students come in from primary school with the habit of doing the study at the kitchen table, which is a very distracting place, or even worse, sometimes sitting in their bed. So try and get your child a kind of some sort of study space that's distraction free. When they go to make a study plan, which should be the first step, it's just a list of things that they must achieve. And they should be, sorry, not must achieve, that they want to achieve.
Goal focus, like,
goal focus, but be realistic, right?
Exactly.
So it's, don't make a list of 25 things, right? And include the homework as part of this list, because you're trying to give your child a sense of satisfaction, gratification. They tick stuff off that they've just achieved. And if they don't get it all complete, just put it onto tomorrow's list. So be specific. Like, don't just say study Irish or study science. It should be like, go over photosynthesis, a very precise, specific task. Richard, go on. Maybe if you...
No, I'm just agreeing with you. You're absolutely right. For an ADHD child, I would not have my study be like 50 minutes, or I'd have it nice and short and precise, and have all those. I mean, it's really important for all students to have outcome goals, you know, and say by the end of the session, 15, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, say if the junior's leaving cert, 35 minutes, 40 minutes, at the end of the session, I'll know Macbeth's character, I'll know photosynthesis, I'll know the reproduction, I'll know whatever it is. And so they have those little goals to work for. And then at the end, did you achieve it? Brilliant, you know, and that's a real sense of accomplishment then for a child, that they feel like, yeah, God, I'm in control of this thing, you know. And you're right, absolutely reduce the amount of sensory stuff going into a child there, and the phone, absolutely get the hell out of the study situation there. But you're right, Luke, that's brilliant tips, you know. It's super.
Another one just on that same thing you mentioned, keep it short. There's a kind of common thing in the world of learning called the Pomodoro technique, which basically says you should be studying for a little 25-minute blocks.
Yes.
And if your child is doing that for little 25-minute blocks, they're much more aware of being productive because they know the time is ticking by. And there's an app, which if you're on the last webinar, you'll have heard me recommend, called the Forest app. And what it does is it's a free app that they can download to their phone. And what it does is they set a little 25-minute block of study time. And if the child doesn't pick up the phone for 25 minutes, it's going to plant a little tree in their virtual forest. If they do pick up the phone to check Snapchat or TikTok or whatever it is, it kills one of their trees. And it's a really nice gamified way of developing good distraction-free
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And here's the really good part about this, Luke, there. I like that. I mean, the neuroscience behind this, as I was saying to Amanda there, you know, ADHD is a really negative self-talk. People don't really understand. They just think it's hyperactivity, whatever. But it's a really negative self-talk. And it's like, you know, I can't do this. I'm no good. Because they've gotten in trouble in school. You know, they've always had impulse control issues. They said things in the class. They made jokes in the class. You know, they got in trouble and all the rest of it. And so they've developed a very negative, you know, narrative about themselves. But here's the idea. Here's a really important thing for your child, for you to know about your child. If they feel a little win in their study session, let's say for 35 minutes they study photosynthesis and they feel like they got that done, they accomplished that, dopamine will fire. Now that is the antidote to that really negative self-churn. And so if they feel good about themselves that they got a little win in their study session, now you're setting them up to feel good about themselves, and they're going to study more, right? And they're going to work more because they're going to chase that fecking dopamine. We're all chasing that dopamine, right? They're going to chase that feeling good about themselves, and all of a sudden you'll start to see that their whole, I mean, we talk about confidence, that will start to change. You know, that you start to change the narrative about themselves.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say, like, a lot of the tools and resources that we try to develop at Study Clicks kind of do in some ways chase that dopamine, like, you know, for example, a good example is our quizzes. You know, we've so many topic quizzes, and they're all designed to track your progress and reaffirm you when you're right and support you when you're wrong. And that's just one little example. There's a couple of things coming through which relate to what we've talked about, is the kind of the need to take the phone away from the study. But what if the phone is used to study? I suppose it's our position as a website as well. And then, you know, post-COVID schooling sees a lot of Teams, Google Classrooms, homework is issued through online platforms. And how do we establish that boundary between the phone and the study tool during study time?
Yeah, I would say the phone has no business there in the study thing, you know what I mean? I think you can get your online content through your iPad or your laptop or whatever. That's what I would say personally now, you know what I mean? And for my daughter, when she's studying, the phone is downstairs and it annoys her and all the rest of it, because she's a normal teenage girl and all the rest of it. And, you know, she might give out to us and say we're too strict about it and all that kind of stuff. But look, the research, Amanda, here is very clear. When a notification comes into your phone, it takes you about 25 minutes. This is the research now coming out of Oxford and Cambridge. The research would say that it takes about 25 minutes to get back into what the Japanese would call, you know, flow, you know, ikigai. And when you're in that flow state, you're taking information in, gray matter has been produced, you know, you're coding stuff into memory, you're learning, you know, you're really learning. And if a notification comes in, a light comes in, something comes in, a thing comes in, a push notification, buzz, zzz, comes in, and you go over here, you know, the research would say it takes about 25 minutes, and then you're doing a Snapchat, you're sending a snap back to the lads, you know what I mean? You're gone, and it takes about 25 minutes for you to get back into that flow state again. So that's a whole study session. And, you know, you don't want to be thinking, I wonder what the lads are up to when you're studying, or what the hell was that? You don't want that. You know, you just don't want that. Nothing good happens there when you're studying.
And I would always say, go ahead.
Sorry, Amanda, go on.
I was just going to say, maybe for there is a cohort where maybe the phone is the only device in the household for whatever reason, or the phone is just available for that study session. I suppose there are those kind of the do not disturb modes and the mute the apps. And the I always say in the sessions that I do with students myself is don't let the apps win. You know,
there is
a team of marketing people who are designed and work very hard to send you notifications at the right time. You know, if you were looking at ASOS last night, ASOS are prompting you tonight to go back to that jacket. You know, I experience it every day. Don't let them win. Don't let the notification distract. Do not disturb mode always.
Yeah. And on that, like, again, something I often do with students when I'm talking with them is get your child to take out their phone and open up the screen time app on it and just get them self-aware of how much they're using their phone. Sometimes they'll laugh at embarrassment. They mightn't show it to you, but I'd often, like, when I go around and ask students that, the median, the most common one is like 4 to 5 hours per day. And they could be students in sixth year. So sometimes just show them, you know, they sometimes don't realize how much they're using it. And then when you're trying to fit in study and everything else that goes with life as a 16 or 17 year old, that's where problems,
Well, just on that, you're dead right. Look, here's the thing that I see working psychologically with it. They never have a chance to relax. They never have a chance to recover. You know what I mean? They never have a chance to recover from school, from like the pandemic, from fucking climate change, from, you know, economic collapse, from like the friends, from someone going out for me. They never have a chance to recover. You know what I mean? By recover, it's just like rest and just not be on anything and just be like peaceful. And that's a really important thing. And the phone takes that from it. If I say to parents, the one thing that a parent can absolutely do for their child is help them with a better sleep pattern. And that's why the phone, they need to get better at not having the phone with them all the time. So when they go into bed and the phone is not there, they're not kind of like feeling a bit antsy around it, because they do need about 8 hours of sleep, you know. Mm-hmm. And the research would bear it out and say if they get that 8 hours of sleep, they're like about nearly 70% more likely to have good mental health the next day. But I can show you the chart. It decreases dramatically when they're getting 5, 4, 3 hours of sleep. Their mental health drops significantly. And so one thing that we can all do as parents is get them off the phones during the day when they're doing their homework, respite from it. So give them a chance to kind of like recover, and then get them off it at nighttime. Really important.
Daddy, yeah, for sure. I would like to move on to a question like that. We often say to children, right, our children, you should be go study, go up to your room and study. Or as a teacher, I would have said, you know, we've a big test coming up on Friday. Go study. I feel that there's a big gap in teaching our young people how to actually learn and how to be effective learners. And I suppose, is there anything a parent can do to kind of help that? Because I think a lot of parents, we all went through the same education system where like no one really taught us. I like a bit like yourself, I figured it out in fifth year and I realized, you know what? And this is the advice I give to students is like, there's no point in just rereading the same revision book or the same notes your teacher gave you. What you really got to do is assess yourself and test your learning and be active in your learning. And that's kind of what StudyClicks was born out of. And that's the way students use it. They'll learn, say, photosynthesis in school with their teacher, and then they'll come on to StudyClicks and they might try some quiz questions on it and realize, actually, I don't know a balanced chemical equation for photosynthesis. Now I'll add that to my notes. So it's true assessment. They kind of check in on their learning. But yeah, like what any advice you would have to parents out there who are trying to instill these skills in their child?
Absolutely. And the first thing I'd say to you is, like I said, I didn't do a fantastic junior cert, right? Because I didn't know how to study. I thought listening to Bob Dylan and the Violent Femmes was pretty good study for me at that particular time in my life, right? And so I didn't study that well. And then when I didn't do very well in my junior cert, I thought to myself, oh dear Lord, you know. And then I figured out, actually, if the process isn't right and you don't actually study effectively, you don't get the results no matter how intelligent you are. You don't get the results, right? And so when I got to fifth year, I figured out, you know, how to kind of study and like that exactly. I figured out, you know, questions get asked and you have to kind of like, you know, really deal with the question. So if I was saying to parents, how would I get my child to study effectively? The first thing what we talked about there is study outcome goals. You know, I'm not thinking about the amount of time my child puts into study. I'm not thinking, you go up there now for 4 hours and do 4 hours. I'm never thinking like that. You know, I'm thinking like, what would you like to get done today? What is it today? And I'd have a little timetable with her, but I'd make it absolutely doable, you know, and I'd have a little thing for the week. And I do this with a lot of students in my clinic. You know, they come in and they'd say, before they leave and start this time of year, they come in to me and say, look, can you give me a hand with like a study timetable? And I'd say, okay, but this thing has to be absolutely livable and it has to be doable. Because if you're coming in here to do this, you know, terrible, really strict, you know, timetable, you're not going to do it. After about 2 weeks, it's not sustainable. It's like dieting, you know, you're not going to do it for, you'll do it for 2 weeks, but then after that, you can't live with it. And so you'll fall back on those old habits very quickly. What I would say to parents always is like, help them to get a nice timetable. That's a livable thing so that they can have their sports and they can have meeting the lads the weekend, the girls the weekend, and going out to cinema and whatever it is. That's all part of it. But in during the week, you're embedding in a nice little habit, which would be like they're maybe an hour and a half of study, 2 hours of study in the night. But in that then, Luke, I'd be thinking like, how many subjects could I get done in 2 or 3 hours? You know, in 2 hours, maybe 3 or 4 subjects there. You know, 2 half-hour subjects, 2 35-minute, you know, there in the hour. I'd be trying to think about the study outcome goals there. Always before I do anything, I think, what's my outcome here? What am I hoping to get out of this 35 minutes? And when you get like, when you start to think like that, now you help your child to understand that I have to have a goal here. Because if I'm just sitting there thinking, I'll do English. Where are my English notes? Shit, they're in my class. They're in school. I'd have it all organized. I'd have everything ready. My room where I study or wherever it is that I study should be absolutely nicely organized. And all the stuff that I'm going to do that week there. And so Monday, I have my timetable. Tuesday, I have my timetable. Because I think a lot, particularly, again, boys, I go back to, because I work with them so much, they struggle with this thing massively. And the Leaving Cert is all about organization. It's really about being organized, you know. It's really about kind of being consistent, and it's about being organized, and it's about, you know, understanding how to get the most out of like that 35 minutes. It's not about doing 5 hours or 8 hours or 10 hours. It's rubbish, you know. It's not about cramming. It's about nice consistency and, you know, doing 35 minutes of a study burst with an idea of what I want to learn. And I just sit down my child, and she's doing the junior circuit, she's studying currently because she's such a wonderful girl, right? Studying away, but she is kind of currently studying. But she called me in and she say, you know, I'm stuck on this kind of thing. What do you think here? And I at times pop my head in and say, how's it going? You know, and again, just trying to just nudge her to kind of figure out what is it you want from this kind of hour and a half that you're going to study? What are you hoping to get here? And so you're trying to just get them to think like that. At the end of this 35 minutes, I hope to know about whatever it is. And then having dinner, I'd say, come on, let's do a little quiz. What did you do there? Age of exploration. Okay, so tell me a little bit about the conquistadors. And so we're having dinner, chatting, and the younger kids are going, who the hell are the conquistadors? And you're having a conversation. So she's done the thing like study clicks do. And then you've got the test that's, you know, and so we're doing that as a living thing in the house. And so it's just a bit of fun. But you're just helping them. I suppose that's the most important thing. You're helping them to think about an outcome goal, Luke.
Yeah. Yeah, and we see that a lot, actually, with, like you mentioned there, kind of quizzing your child at the kitchen table. We see a lot of parents actually using study clicks with first and second years. You know, let's say the child is struggling with financial maths or algebra or whatever, and it's like the parent is like, well, what can I do now to do simultaneous equations? I can't do them anymore, but I know now I have support here. It's something that pops up, we hear it a lot, like in terms of, well, at least when, for the last number of years, different learning styles, and we'd have auditory learners, visual learners, etc. Is that actually, does that stand up in the research?
Oh, it does.
It is a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like some students, I couldn't do this now, but I know loads of students who love to study with their ear pods in, you know. I couldn't study with ear pods in. You know what I mean? If I had the Beatles playing in the background, I'd be listening to the lyrics. So I couldn't, I'd have to have the old silence around me to study properly. That's the kind of studier I would have been over the years. Children study all sorts of ways. They like to have, I suppose, modern students, you know, probably do like to study with the ear pods in. They do like to have noise as they're concentrating. I couldn't do that. I'd like to have silence, but there are loads of different ways that you like to study and how you like to study, whether that's writing things down. I like to write things down because I find that goes into my head, right? Some students might, like, as you said there, a tutorial or a video on WB8s that you have there, and, you know, and study clicks to hear someone talk about WB8s, to hear his poem being read, you know, by WB8s, all of that stuff. There's so many different ways, you know, in how we kind of take things in, how the brain processes information. That's the kind of fascinating thing about the brain, Luke. We don't process information across the species the same way, you know, and so it's just trying to figure out what way do you like to learn. You know?
Yeah, totally. And on that question around listening to music, we get asked that a lot. Like, is it okay to listen to music as you study? My answer to that is ideally try and listen to music doesn't have like lyrics, like, because but having background music that kind of makes you feel calm and study for longer, if that is the case, albeit with plenty of breaks, that's a good thing. Obviously, don't do it all the time, because remember, in your Leaving Cert, you're not going to be allowed to listen to music.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago, one of our customer support team, Gabrielle, she actually recorded a 3-hour study music playlist. And it's got kind of like Falling Rain and all this type of stuff. It gives you this kind of cozy vibe, and it's on YouTube, and you can listen to it. And it's got huge amounts of listens. And students put on that kind of thing when they're studying. They just want kind of rain falling in the background.
Ambient music would be kind of good. Yeah, absolutely. Or like classical music. The research in that would be good. I don't know personally about how successful your study would be when the ear pods are right in your ear, you know what I mean?
This is in the background kind of
thing. Yeah, that's ambient. That kind of stuff would be much more researched and positive about like classical music or ambient sounds in the background and all that kind of stuff. But again, it's just, you know, every child is different. If it gets your child who doesn't like studying to study, I'd say it's a bit of a win.
You know, like, after all these tests come out, right, and like we're going to have, they're all doing their Christmas tests or their mocks, right? So all the parents listening in, they're going to have a situation where their child is getting results back, right? And great if they're all good results, but there's going, inevitably for most students, there's going to be a number of subjects where the results are really poor. It has the potential to kind of derail their self-esteem. How, as a parent, like we always hear the kind of, as parents, I know, like I should say, I've got three kids. My eldest is just about to start first year. We always hear this golden word about resilience, and it's great to make your child resilient. How do you kind of build resilience in your child? And I suppose answer that if you can through the lens of like they get a bad exam result.
Yeah, no, exactly. First thing, exactly. No, it's a great question because it's a real thing that we all deal with as parents, right? The first thing I'd say always when I was, and I worked as a teacher for years, you know, and I work with students all the time around these kind of ideas. The first thing I'd always say when I was starting off the fifth year cycle, you know, it's like, you know, no one here is going to get a H1 all the time. That doesn't happen for anyone. And particularly if you're very ambitious and you want to get a H1 and all the rest of it, or you want to get a H2, if you really want to, you know, do high, get high, you have to understand the road to like success is littered with like speed bumps. And you got to be able to understand that that's not failure, or that's not a comment on you as a person. That's about your learning and how to get more effective as a learner. And so that's what I would say to, first of all, what I'm trying to say there is we reframe all results now, you know, as learning. And so you didn't do well in that exam. This is what I'd say to my own daughter. This is what I taught myself, Luke, too. Many times I went for things and I didn't get what I wanted out of it. And I'd say, was the process good enough to me for me to get what I wanted out of it? Did I do enough, like, you know, to get it? And so I'd say to my own daughter, well, look, do you think is that result a fair reflection of how you were in that exam? Or do you feel like a bit hard done by? And get them to think honestly about it. No judgment in it. You know, what I say to parents, you know, make sure that your child's identity doesn't get caught up in just being academic or being a student, you know. You don't want that, because that's a zero-sum game, that if they don't do well, then their whole identity collapses. They're far more complex, and they involve far more multitudes than just being good at school and all that. And you're trying to help them. That can often be a very difficult paradigm for a child to get caught in, because when they get a H2, the whole class goes, oh, Richard Hogan only got a H2 in English because he's the brilliant English student. You know, it's kind of like it can be a real painful place to be in. It can be what I often call is like, you know, a bit of burden of talent, you know, that it becomes your only identity. And again, as a sports player, it becomes your only identity, or you're only that good at English. That's your whole thing. So if you don't get a H1 in English, there's something wrong here. I would say you're trying to work against all of that kind of stuff, and you're trying to help your child to understand every bad result is moving you towards the better result, and it's good to get it now. And we have to figure out now, it could be your child gets a bad result and they put nothing in. We're talking about the child who's put work in. Your child has put nothing in and gotten a bad result and they don't care. Now we're in a different conversation, you know what I mean? Now we're in a different conversation. Now you're in a kind of place you're kind of going, well, how do I motivate this child to get them to get start thinking about themselves in the future and what they want? And I'd sit down and say, well, how does that result make you feel? Asking that question, you know, what do you feel after getting that result? Do you think that's a fair reflection of like your ability? I get to think like that. I'd ask them, I'd always be asking them questions. Look, you know what I mean? I'd always ask them questions rather than going, why the hell, why have you got this result? You know, that's because where we kind of go, because we might get a bit embarrassed. We're kind of thinking, Jesus, what am I going to tell the uncles here about the junior cert or the even cert? And it's like, no, don't feel any of that stigma. I just ask them, is this a fair reflection of, you know, what you think you're capable of? They might more than likely say no, you know, say, and so is this what you want for yourself? Because this is for you, nobody else. And what I always say to my daughters, I see your potential. I see what you're capable of. That's what I always say to her. I just want you to kind of work towards that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's not for me, that's for you. You know, I want you to reach that.
And changing tack completely, right? And then we might just jump into a few questions. But sure. I often think, right, and it's kind of a distant memory at this stage, but the COVID pandemic that happened, right? And I'm not sure anymore for me personally that it's a memory at this stage. But I often think, what effect does it have on this generation? Like, you know, my little daughter, who's now in sixth class, she would have been probably second, third class when it all happened.
Yeah.
The current 6 years probably would have been, what, first or second years. Have you seen anything in your clinics or just from your work that actually, is there any lasting effects on this generation in your view?
Yes, there is. The biggest one I see clinically is that they don't want to grow up. They don't want to become adults. It's a very sad thing to see. And you know, they'd say to me, you know, I don't want to become an adult. And it's directly coming out of, like, you know, having so much life experience and exposure to things taken from them. And so that their, you know, sense of themselves and future thinking is kind of eroded. And so when they think of the future, it's kind of dark. But also, like, you know, let's be honest, they're swamped with climate stuff. They're swamped with wars. They're swamped with housing crisis and crisis and crisis and crisis. I mean, you know, every day out of the White House is fucking noise. And so you can see why they kind of go, oh, my God. But also they're looking at us, Luke, you know, because I asked them, I'd say, what do you think about the future? That's kind of scary. They'd say, oh, the bills, you know, the lunches, the uniforms. They're looking at us thinking, God, that looks pretty miserable, you know. And it's like, we got to kind of show them that it's actually fun to be an adult. And there is a future out there for you to go out and get. It absolutely is. Because if you listen to the media, it's kind of like there isn't. You know, and that's what they often say to me. A first year said to me there only recently in September, what's the point in study, Richard, when the world won't be here in 4 years anyway? So I won't be doing the junior cert, you know what I mean? And he wasn't kind of, you know, he wasn't being sassy or whatever. He was actually kind of going, you know, what do you think? Is that true? And I was like, no, that's not true at all. And so I think we have to be careful of all of that catastrophizing that we kind of go on with our kids as well. And so
it tells me modeling your behavior is so important.
Absolutely. And optimism. Yeah. And I always talk about what I'm really looking forward to. And, you know, when I write something, like something happens and publicly or whatever, and I'd say, and I don't get it, whatever, like, you know, my last book was nominated for an Irish Book Award, but it didn't win. And so my kids were like, oh, are you disappointed? And I'd say, no, I'm not actually. I don't know, was that good enough to get that award? I'm going to go for it in the next one. And so you're trying to teach them, you go for it again. And I could see my daughter when she was going to try out for, like, the Camogie team, you know, and in fifth class, she didn't get into the team that she wanted to get onto. I didn't see a crushed child there. She said to me, yeah, I'm going to go again next year, Dad. I think I'll get it next year. And that's resilience there. You know what I mean? That's the thinking that, like, you know, it's not my person. For me not to get the Camogie doesn't mean I'm a terrible, shite person. You know, that's where it becomes their identity. And you don't want that at all. You want them to kind of see that the Camogie is great fun. They love it, they want to be competitive at it, they want to do well in it, but it's not everything about her personality and who she is, and that next year she'll go for it again. And, you know, if you do a bad exam in November, it's not everything about who you are. You figure out why that exam didn't go so well, and you ask a couple of honest questions. Did I put the effort in? Did I get a bad exam? Did I have a bad moment? Did I have a bit of a panic? If so, you know, cortisol probably got released and I had a bit of a panic and my memory kind of was impacted. Okay, let's figure out why you're getting so stressed in exams. So there's loads of questions that I'd be asking my kid.
Yeah. No, look, that's a really, we'll take a couple of questions now, but before we jump into them, Amanda, I might just show the audience just where they can find the recording of the previous version of this. So if you, and this is freely available, whether your child is a StudyClicks member or not, if you just go to studyclicks.ie and you scroll to the footer of the website, you're going to see this thing called Parent Center. Click on that. And then in here, you'll find the back to school webinar, which you would have done. Now, it was recorded back in September time, but there's a lot of stuff and you can kind of go into the chapters there and see, you know, listen to different parts and so on. This tonight's webinar will also end up on the Parent Center. It'll take us a couple of days. Or if you want, you can, you know, listen to it on Spotify while you're out for a walk. Feel free to share any of these links. There's nothing private about them with any of your friends or whatever, or anyone you think it might be relevant to. So yeah, maybe Amanda, if there's any other questions that you want to throw at us.
Yeah, I think, again, fantastic questions tonight, everyone. Thank you so much. And lots of inspiration for further webinar topics. So if we don't address your question tonight, we'll go again in the future. I think just speaking off the back of that kind of positive attitude towards things, the few questions came in there about my child hates a subject, or maybe doesn't think so positively of the teacher of the subject, or they think that nothing really matters until the leaving cert, so I'm not going to bother until then. Just the kind of the negative trains of thought that might filter into study. I suppose to address the subject specific one, because I feel like that can be I think back to my
again own. That's a really good point, Amanda, and I'd say to me, you know, depending on, I'd always use analogies for children that they like kind of relate to. So if that was someone, if a child was saying that to me, like football, I'd say, so you're saying the World Cup is the only important football game out there, you know, and that the league doesn't matter, and, you know, and so that doesn't make any sense, does it? And you can't have a good performance in the World Cup if you don't play all these other games to get there. And in fact, you won't get selected for the World Cup. You know what I mean? I'd work off those images. I'd always have analogies that they can really, you know, relate to and resonate with. And so the question is, if the child hates the subject, You know what I mean? That is the problem of the Leaving Cert. Therein lies the problem of the Leaving Cert that I'm not delighted with myself either. I had to do seven subjects because I did ordinary level Irish and maths, right? So I had to do seven subjects there. And was it eight? Even to have six higher level, yeah, I had to do eight subjects there. And so that is the dilemma of the Leaving Cert. And I had to do a couple that I absolutely hated. And that is, you know, when you think about that as a kind of a process or a system, you're making kids do things that they'll never ever do again at a very high level for a moment in their lives that they'll absolutely never think about again. But I suppose they're going to have to kind of figure out how to do it. I would never jump on the teacher's crap conversation, because that only allows them to develop a narrative. They'd be much less likely to listen to the teacher. If you go, yeah, that teacher's awful, Jesus Christ, they're useless. And you might well think that, right? And you do come across that as a parent in the parent-teacher meeting, you're going to go, Lord above. You might be thinking, God, this is tough going here, right? As a former teacher, I have encountered this myself, right? And so I have to watch myself that I don't go home and go, yeah, you're right about that teacher. You know, you don't want to do that, because that will only alienate your child and give them more, you know, validate them in their dislike and resistance to them. I wouldn't do that at all. I would say always that we're not going to allow any teacher to put us off the subject and get what we want out of it. And I would say that to students when they used to come to me in, you know, in different schools I'd work in, and they'd come in the grinds and they'd do the grinds and they'd say, you know, my teacher's very bad. And I'd say, okay, if your teacher's very bad, but that doesn't, you're not going to be able to write that note on the Leaving Cert, my teacher was very bad. You're going to have to figure this out so that you can get the results out of it. You're not going to give that teacher that power to knock you off your course. If you want to go to law or whatever it is, you want to go to medicine, you want to go to engineering, whatever course, you're not going to give that teacher the power to knock you off that. You're going to have to figure out how we're going to get a great result out of it without giving them all that power over you. And it is hard having a teacher that isn't that dedicated, not that takes their job that serious. It does affect a child's outcome, there's no doubt about it, but we're going to have to kind of think about how we might support them as parents.
And I don't think there's any student who would say that they love all seven or eight subjects that they're doing to equal measure. You know, it's not designed. You can't love Irish and love maths and be great. You know, it's a mixed bag for everyone. And
for sure,
the system is designed to show you what you like as well as what you don't like. So you kind of have to ride that wave a bit
and drag you through the misery of what you don't like.
Well, luckily there's things like Study Clicks to help you through.
Exactly.
But brilliant. I think we will leave it there for tonight, folks. Thank you so much for everyone in the chat. As Luke mentioned there, the webinar, we're going to work to get it up on Spotify and on the StudyClicks Parent Centre as soon as we can. Thank you so much to Luke, of course, and Dr. Richard again for his time and his insights. And thanks for all the thank yous that are coming through the chat as well. We're glad to hear you found it helpful and informative. Until the next one. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your evening, everyone.
Brilliant. Thanks guys.
Cheers, guys. Thanks, Amanda. Thanks, Richard.
Bye.
And that concludes the conversation between Dr. Richard Hogan and Luke Saunders. If you found this podcast useful, we'd really encourage you and appreciate it if you could share it with a friend. Once again, you can check out the StudyClicks Parent Centre for more free tips and resources on how to support your child through secondary school. The link is in the description of this podcast. You can check out more of Dr. Richard Hogan's stuff by following him on Instagram @DrRichardHogan. Bye for now!